Hello, everyone, and welcome to MedCurity Live. I'm your host, Alexa, and with me today, I have Craig Petronella, CEO of Petronella Technology Group, Incorporated. Craig has written multiple books on HIPAA and cybersecurity, and we are so excited to have him as a guest on our show today. Thank you so much for joining us, Craig.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
Today, we'll be talking about business associate agreements and what covered entities should be looking into when they create a business associate agreement with an outside vendor. So I'm just going to go ahead and jump right into the questions. My first question for you today is, what are the top three ways that a covered entity should assess their business associate agreement?
Sure. So a business associate agreement, or a BAA, is a legal contract between a covered entity and a provider that handles PHI, or patient health information. So the top way that I recommend is first hire a healthcare attorney, because it's a legal document. So you want to make sure that whatever you're editing, if you have a business associate agreement already, is valid, and in your state, there's state laws and regulations. So you want to make sure that you work with an expert or a specialist attorney that specializes in HIPAA and healthcare. That's the number one thing, because if you do something wrong on your own, then you're going to have the risks and liabilities of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The other thing that I recommend doing is every year you should be doing a security risk assessment that also looks at your 18 policies and procedures, including your BAA. So you want to make sure, if you're a covered entity, that you have a BAA with any vendors that are handling PHI. So what that means is, if you have, for example, an electronic medical records vendor, or an EMR software system that you guys use, well, let's say it's cloud-based and, you know, you're putting in patient health information in there and you're scheduling patients in there, they're going to be a BAA. So you're going to want to make sure that you have that legal contract between your covered entity and them. And what it means is, the legal contract defines what happens to PHI, how are they going to protect the PHI on your behalf, what happens in the event of a breach. So it defines all of those things in that legal document. The other thing that I would look at with a BAA is, you might have some vendors that don't need to have a BAA. For example, if you have a cleaning service or a janitorial service that comes through your office and they take the trash out for you, for example, it's your responsibility as a covered entity to not throw PHI into the trash. So you should be shredding that information. But if you had some mm-hmm. sanitized information that was thrown into the trash, that maybe had the name, but not linked together with name, date of birth, and other personal identifiable aspects to prove the identity of someone, well, that particular company, that cleaning company, they don't necessarily have to have a BAA with you. So you want to make sure that you only have BAAs or legal contracts with those that need to have a BAA. So it may be a CPA firm that is accessing PHI for you, for your covered entity, an IT service provider that might be doing remote or on-site support for you that could be exposed or come in contact with PHI or needs to access PHI to troubleshoot something. Maybe somebody that comes in to look at a medical device or of some sort but needs patient information to do their job, it would be considered a BAA.
That's definitely some interesting information. I didn't think about the janitorial aspect of, that didn't even cross my mind when creating a BAA. But I think what's interesting is that people either sometimes underdo their BAAs or go overboard, and they feel like they need to create a BAA with absolutely every single outside vendor.
Yeah, and that's a good point. I mean, when in doubt, you should get the vendor to sign the BAA, because it's better to have them to sign the BAA and be legally obligated to protect the PHI should they get exposed to it, than mm-hmm. to not have the BAA in the first place. There's a company here where I'm from in Raleigh, North Carolina, that they did not sign a BAA with one of their third parties for X-ray film processing, and they got fined a lot of money. It was $750,000 mm-hmm. for that infraction by not having the BAA. So when in doubt, definitely get the BAA signed with the vendor. But you want to make sure that you're also under legal counsel with an expert, a healthcare attorney.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's a liability. It's a form of insurance, and it's always so much better to be safe than sorry. So much better. So second question is, what agreements do you think should be included in a business associate agreement? When covered entities are creating their agreements, what should they be looking for specifically with their vendors?
Any vendor you do business with as a covered entity is a potential risk to you. So if that vendor doesn't have good cybersecurity or cyber safety hygiene, meaning they're not, they as a business associate need to be compliant with HIPAA too. So if they can't prove that they're HIPAA compliant, and what I mean by that is furnish evidence to you, HIPAA security risk assessments need to be done annually, third-party penetration tests, policies, procedures. If they can't share and furnish that information to you, they're high risk. So you should know how to score the vendors that you're working with to limit your risk. So as far as agreements that should be included in the business associate agreement, it's not really agreements, it's qualifications. There's in the industry, there's something called VSQ or vendor security questionnaires that very large companies typically give to the little companies. So for example, if there's a healthcare clearinghouse like Anthem, Blue Cross Blue Shield, for example, I'm sure everybody listening has heard of them. They might have a vendor security questionnaire, which is a very detailed spreadsheet, typically about 600 plus questions divided into all different categories from physical security all the way up to the application layer of security, getting into the nitty gritty details of how the environment's configured. They're going to ask the covered entity, what are you doing to make sure that you're handling PHI correctly and protecting it? Are you encrypting the data at rest? Are you encrypting in transit? What else are you doing? Are you doing phish tests? What kind of antivirus systems are you, these are all security controls that I'm identifying, but they're in addition to security controls, there's physical controls. So the business associate has to be HIPAA compliant, just like you do, and they need to be able to supply the evidence of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that brings me to my last question, which is sort of an interesting scenario. So last year, Amazon created something called the Alexa Skills Kit, which is basically, it's taking the Amazon Alexa device and turning it into kind of a digital health virtual assistant. It's now a HIPAA-eligible device that is supposed to help hospitals and patients with, menial tasks like, let's say, scheduling a doctor visit or reminding them to pick up their medication or track their prescription or something like that. It has a bunch of different skills to it, but basically Amazon has put a lot of protections in to try and protect PHI. So there's still a lot of restrictions surrounding it. However, just this year, they're kind of opening it up to more app developers with covered entities. Before, there was only about 6 covered entities that were able to use this Alexa Skills Kit with their personal company app. So now any app developer can implement this into their hospital app. And in order to do this, Amazon had to enter a business associate agreement with any covered entity that they decided to work with. So my question for you is, what do you think of Amazon entering the health industry in this way? What do you think covered entities should look for in a business associate agreement with Amazon? I mean, they are a huge corporation. There could be a lot of potential risk with giving personal information over to Amazon. There's been some skepticism around Amazon being able to have access to personal health records because they have had some security breaches, particularly with the Amazon Alexa. So I'm just wondering what you think covered entities or any health provider that's listening right now who might be interested in using this new Alexa Skills Kit, what they should be looking for, what they should be looking out for.
So for me, this falls into a legal category and a legal discussion with a healthcare attorney, because there is risk, like you outlined. Amazon and Siri from Apple are always listening devices, right? What's really happening to the conversations that may contain PHI in the medical practice, right? From my viewpoint, Amazon's really big, right? So they've got lots of employees, lots of legal counsel, and most covered entities are smaller. That is a big risk, in my opinion. I defer a lot of that counsel to a healthcare attorney expert that could advise on the risks of that. From my lens and from my viewpoint, I think it would be very risky. I mean, think about it. If something were to happen from a legal perspective and a breach were to happen, who do you think is going to be able to better weather the breach and the legal costs of that? The big guy or the little guy?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? Yeah. So, I mean, everything's a risk. Every vendor's a risk in this context, in this question. It's a cool factor. I do think, and I am familiar with the Amazon skill system and the technology and the AI behind it. But there's always this balance of, is it worth the risk to take on and the potential for a breach versus the convenience, right? Security is always a balance. If I completely secure your medical practice with all of these layers in place that we can put in to make you essentially unhackable, right? At what point is it too much? Like, do we build a moat around the castle and make it so that, you know, it's really difficult to do your job? Well, that, you know, some, that's what I'm saying. It's a balance, right? So in this context with Amazon, I think that you have to weigh the pros and the cons and see if it's worth it for the risk. And everyone's risk tolerance is going to be different. But I leave the legal questions, because I'm not an attorney, back. I do think that that's a conversation that each covered entity that's considering putting an Amazon Alexa into their practice have legal counsel to discuss the pros and cons of that. You know, what are they trying to do? What are they trying to automate? What menial tasks are they going to ask Alexa to do? You know, and is it worth it to have that risk in your practice, or is it better to not?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it definitely depends on what kind of tasks you're wanting the Alexa skills to perform, because it could have minimal contact with PHI. But then again, if the system even has a way of having access to personal health information, it doesn't matter if the skills kit is using it, if it somehow has access to it, an employee could get access to it. And that, I think that was something that when I was doing research on this, I realized the reason why this could be such a risky thing for covered entities is that Amazon is huge and there are so many employees. And a big problem when it comes to doing a BAA with another vendor is that it's usually an employee mistake that leads to leaked information.
And even if you read the detailed terms and conditions of Amazon, and we'll look to their AWS product, their cloud service, a lot of medical companies use the Amazon AWS ecosystem to host medical data and protect it. And Amazon will sign a BAA with you. However, when you look at the detailed terms and conditions, you are still, meaning the covered entity, is still responsible for the data. They hold themselves harmless. So what does that mean? That means Amazon is giving you their infrastructure, right? But you have a responsibility to configure it properly and to secure it properly. And if you can't configure it properly, assess the environment properly, and ensure that you have the adequate security controls and can provide evidence of all of the above, if you can't do all that, what happens in a breach? You're going to get infractions and get fined a lot of money, because it stacks. The infractions stack thousands of dollars on top. That's why the expenses get out of control. But any of the providers, Amazon included, and even in this context, if you read the legal documents, the terms and conditions that you have to accept in order to use their environment, and Google's included in this too, you as the covered entity or the business associate, when you use those platforms, you are not going to be automatically HIPAA compliant just because you use those platforms. They're just giving you access to their infrastructure, and it's your responsibility to make sure that they're secure.
And I think that's another reason why, as you mentioned earlier, it's really important to have a legal representative look at those kinds of contracts and documents with you, because there's a lot of technical terms and fine print that needs to be read and needs to, you know, you need to go over all of it, because even though it can be a real pain to have to go over all those details, in the end, it is so worth it to go over every single part of those kinds of contracts in order to, you know, mitigate all of your risks, because you don't want to have that end up biting you later.
Yeah. And the same for the security risk assessments. You want to make sure that you're engaging a healthcare attorney that engages you. So for example, if the covered entity has a healthcare attorney that they work with, they should. If they don't, they should have that healthcare attorney hire the provider that they choose to perform the security risk assessments and the pen test. And the reason why is for attorney-client privilege. If you're a covered entity or a business associate, and you hire an IT provider to do those actions, security risk assessments, pen tests, et cetera, and you don't have the attorney that you're going through hire that IT vendor, then you're holding risks. You don't have the attorney-client privilege protections. So if that vendor, that IT vendor, finds issues that are potential breach, violations of HIPAA, then you have no protections under the attorney-client privilege. That information would be public if it was requested from the Office of Civil Rights. That's huge. So if you think about that for a minute, you really want to make sure that you're working with a healthcare attorney to hire out those services for you. And yeah, it's going to be a little bit more expensive, but it's so much less risk for you. Because should there be a breach and should there be an issue with a business associate that you're working with or a vendor, and they, you know, the OCR comes in and does an audit and they ask you, well, okay, when was your last risk assessment? When was your last pen test? Show me proof of your policies, procedures, and show me all your security controls. Well, if you had a healthcare attorney that you're working with, you have a shield there, and you have somebody that can help work with you or a team that can work with you to only disclose the information that is required by law in your state. Otherwise, you don't have those protections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And especially nowadays with, and right now, there have been so many breaches because of COVID-19 and a lot of healthcare providers don't quite understand that fine line of protecting patient health information and sharing information to help stop COVID-19. And then there's also been a lot of security breaches with how hectic hospitals have been. So people need to be, you know, hospitals need to be very cautious, because at the end of the day, you are trying to protect your organization. You are trying to decrease liabilities and just being careful and having other people, like we were saying, you know, a legal representative, some outsourced company or program that can do an SRA for you and help you along the way, because it's a lot to do it all yourself, and there's really no way that you can do it all yourself. So getting those good outside sources to help you during this really crazy time is incredibly useful. So wow, thank you so much, Craig, for all this information. This was a really interesting session for me. I learned a lot, and it's really fun to talk about especially Amazon and all the different technology that's coming out right now, and how covered entities can be careful right now during this time and when making their business associate agreements. I really appreciate all the insight you gave us today.
Absolutely. My pleasure. Just one thing I wanted to touch on with the COVID-19 and working from home. The reason why there's so much risk there is because a lot of the folks are working from home and they're using their home devices, and their home devices are often open, and they're not controlled by, in this context, the covered entity, or they're not controlled by a corporation, right? So the home users or the homeowners are the ones that are responsible for making sure that operating systems up to date, or is antivirus installed and configured properly? Is it patched? Does it have a valid subscription? So now you have all these security controls that are in the hands of a homeowner who's not a security expert and not even close to being a HIPAA expert, right? So unless you have control over what's called a BYOD, or bring your own device policy, and you're a covered entity, and you supply that device, that hardware, with the controls on it, and you can furnish evidence of it, if you're not doing those things, then you have huge risks allowing your employees to use systems that are not optimal. And you could be having not only infractions from unpatched systems, but you could also have issues with email, not using encryption on email, for example, or passing patient health information from one device to another, but not doing it securely and in the proper way. So there's all sorts of pitfalls people can fall into. And that's why this pandemic is so big with security risks and hacks. So that's why, I go back to the assessments. You have to do the assessments, and you have to score what you're doing, and you have to score not only the technology, but I call it people, process, and technology. You have to test people with phishing email tests, and you have to do continuous security awareness training. And it's only those folks that take that seriously and actually do it and can supply the evidence and the proof of it. Those are the ones that are going to come out ahead.
I mean, nowadays the risk is huge for employee mistakes, just because of how fast hospitals and covered entities had to transition from working in office to working at home. And that was a really, really fast transition. So obviously, like you said, people don't have those, work-related computers or devices. And some of them are making the mistake of saying, well, we just don't have the time to get everyone a computer or the money or the, financial support right now. And believe me, it's a lot less cost involved when you are protecting yourself now versus having to pay that really big OCR fine later. The OCR is not taking things lightly right now, and they've already hit a lot of covered entities with some huge fines just recently because of these kinds of mistakes related to BYOD. So thank you so much for bringing that up.
Yeah, and if you're working at home from a laptop and that laptop doesn't have encryption or other security controls to be HIPAA compliant, and let's say, you know, you get robbed and somebody steals that laptop. Well, guess what? Now you have a huge breach on your hands because that laptop had PHI on it. And for every record on it, you're going to get fined from the OCR. So that's why it's such a huge risk, because there's just so much work. Like you said, we were all rushed into this, right? But there had to have been shortcuts taken to kind of deal with this pandemic. But now is the time to be proactive and actually go through it, do the risk assessments, look through everything, and make sure you button up things that you can button up, because you don't want to wait until you have a breach, because most breaches, I don't know if you looked at the last statistics on that, but the cost of it is average around $200,000 for a breach. And I mean, I don't know most small businesses that could afford to write a check for that amount of money. I mean, most of them are going to go out of business.
Yeah, a lot of smaller providers were already struggling from having to deal with the COVID-19 shutdown. So it's not a good time to be taking security precautions lightly. Things have started to sort of regain normalcy. So it's a good time to take a pause and look at your security risks and do the SRA and do these things to help protect your organization.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Craig. My goodness, we went over a lot of really great information, and I'm really excited to get all this great information out to everyone that's listening. Thank you so much for joining us today. I really, really enjoyed it.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it very much.
Of course. Have a great day.
Thank you. You too.